Hi, this is Cup of Joe Morning Show.
Hello, Cup of Joe Morning Show. This is Stephen Curtis Chapman.
Hey, man, I am so honored. How are you this morning?
I am doing well, doing very well. I have my I have my Cup of Joe here with me, so I'm ready. I'm ready to go on the Cup of Joe Morning Show.
Hey, all right. Man, I love you, man. I tell you.
All right, look at me rhyming.
Well, I would hope so. A singer-songwriter, you do have a couple of years of that in.
Well, that's true. I have had a little bit of practice.
I hope it's okay, because sometimes when I finish a song of yours, I say, you know, he actually wrote that just playing the guitar in his kitchen after he did the dishes.
That's true.
And it
is probably about 75% of the time. That's probably about true, because I love doing the dishes, and that's like one of my things. When I'm home, I feel like I'm constantly standing at the dishwasher, because with the 47 kids and everything else it seems like we have, there's always dirty dishes. So, yeah, you're probably right about that.
So do you tell people that you're prematurely gray or that you really started in the 80s? Oh, man.
There's no gray hair. It's blonde, you know. I don't have any. Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, one of those fortunate, you know, guys. It's like, yeah, it's highlights, you know, because I've got such blonde hair that, you know, through the years.
You know, look way better than I do, and I started about in radio a little bit after you did, and I, you look way better than I do, so it must be something to it. But
nah.
People kind of want to know about that facial hair. Are you going to want to look like David Crowder?
No.
Okay.
I'm pretty well clean shaven now. I'm going to let Crowder have the beard look. I go through a little season. It's usually right around Christmas time, and partly because I'm not on tour and I'm not having to, you know, get, you know, clean shaven,
right,
and cleaned up, you know, all the time for going on stage. And so I end up letting my facial hair grow. And it is weird if for some reason it grows out, you know, looking gray, even though I'm so young. So I don't know. It's like, I think it's because it's Christmas and, you know, it thinks I'm Santa Claus. So it just tries to go for that kind of look. But yeah, I'm pretty, that's pretty well gone now. That's just something I toy around with usually for about 3 weeks in December, and then it usually comes off in January.
I'm one of those people that grew up with you on the cassette tape and Michael W. Smith and Amy Grant and who else did we have there? A couple of groups, probably the Newsboys were around, and that's it, man.
They came along pretty close there. And of course, if you go back even a little bit, you know, the first concerts I did, I did a few concerts opening for Petra. You go back that far? Do you remember any of the Petra days or any of those
guys?
I mean, that was crazy. That was like, you know, rock and roll music, you know, about Jesus. So it was like, can you do that? Surely you can't do that.
That's what we were thinking, exactly. And some of us were thinking, man, that's pretty cool. So thank you.
Yeah,
thank
I know. You very much. And we couldn't tell anybody, but that's what we were thinking.
Exactly. And you look good, too. You had the hair. What was it called? I forgot, but it was longer than it is now, obviously. But
Oh, yeah, the mullet.
Yeah.
The mullet, you know, the party in the back, business in the front kind of thing, you know. Yes.
You actually visited this very same facility, which we have been good stewards of. I know this is going to be a shock to you, but... and I'm sure you don't remember. And I wasn't even here, but it had to be in the late 80s because we started in 85, and I came in 93, and you were getting going then.
Yeah.
And people always said that, you know, Stephen Curtis Chapman actually was here. He was going around because at that time we probably had 10 Christian radio stations. You know, you couldn't do that now for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Yeah, I was there. Cool, man. Well, this is that was right around the beginning. You're right, because my first album came out in 1987, and I would have been making my rounds in those early days, you know, asking people to, will you please play my song on the radio? And that's what I'm doing with this tour that I'm coming to see you guys with, the SEC Solo, we're calling it, is remembering so much of that. It's been such a fun and just a powerful time kind of for me after 30 years. My first album came out 31 years ago. Now it's 1987.
Woo!
And, you know, a journey, a great adventure, you might call it, that I never could have imagined 30 years ago. And I wrote a lot of that in a book, you know, came out last March, my life story, basically my memoirs called Between Heaven and the Real World. And this is kind of my musical version, sort of the Reader's Digest condensed version of my life story, faith story, musical life story, kind of all, you know, all wrapped up into a night of music with me and my guitar. And it's been such a powerful thing. I mean, I've loved it. I've, you know, but just to remember that story, and it's amazing. It's just a kind of blows my mind. I was talking to a good friend last night who actually was my very first drummer in my first band that I put together in high school when I was starting to write my own music. Oh. And we would do a few covers, but we would play my music. It was the first time I'd ever, you know, played original music with a band. And I had this young guy that was in school with me that played drums, and I hadn't seen him in 20 years or more. And we ended up on a flight together yesterday coming into Cleveland, Ohio. So he came to the concert last night with his wife, and we sat down and we just start remembering together. And he said, man, it's just been amazing to watch, you know, your journey, because I was there at the beginning. You know, you were playing your first songs, you were writing your first songs, and we never dreamed. He said, I remember us sitting and watching the Grammy Awards together, and you know, we'd watch it, and it wasn't even anywhere on your radar that, hey, someday I want to do that. You know, I want to be up there. I mean, we loved it. We loved music, and you wanted to play music, but it's just been beyond anything I sure could have ever imagined, that's for sure.
I'm thinking, Stephen, that you did it. And can I call you Stephen?
Please do.
Okay. Yes. I mean, I don't know what your buddies call you. Do you got a nickname?
No, that's it. You got it.
Is it? Is it?
Right.
Was Mary Beth call you? What'd she call you? Stephen Curtis, get in here.
Well, okay. She usually calls me, hey, come in here and wash some more dishes.
I forgot what I was going to say.
Now
I'm in trouble. Good, well, listen, now when you come to Goodwill Church in April, I know some of the times you've said sometimes you have other guys with you. What's that going to be like when you come?
Yeah, this is just me. This is, okay. You know, I've toured for 30 years and had incredible bands, and, you know, I've had tours where I've had, you know, three or four buses and semi-trucks full of, you know, lights and sound equipment and all of that, and I've loved, you know, all of that. It's been amazing, just the tours I've been a part of and gotten to put together. But, you know, we got a little saying back in Nashville where I come from that says it all begins with a song. And really, it all begins and ends with a song. When all the, you know, production, all the, you know, fancy light show and video and all that stuff is done, you know, what we do, you know, is it's about the song and the music and the journey, you know, that we've been on, and the way my music, you know, I feel like has woven in and out of the lives of so many other people.
Oh, right.
I hear that from people all the time, and that's an amazing thing for me. And sometimes I've just felt like with this season that I'm in, just thinking about that, remembering, that's a word that just keeps coming up, remembering. And, you know, it's having just me with my guitars. I got two or three guitars with me, a piano, you know, but it's just me. It gives me the freedom to just kind of tell the story and take people on the journey. And I'm not worried about a band sitting back there going, hey, you know, play a song, or, you know, what are you doing? We didn't put that song in the set list. You know, I get to kind of go wherever the story takes me, wherever the spirit leads. And you know, remember, I mean, I go way off the beaten path. I play usually, you know, I end up playing the very first song I learned on the guitar, which was a Johnny Cash song my dad taught me when I was 6 years old, Folsom Prison Blues.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
So I get to play a little bit of that, and, you know, it just gives me the freedom to really be more telling the story and kind of letting the story take it. And you know, it's a lot of fun, laughter. I mean, I show some pictures and video stuff, you know, that's woven into the night that keeps, you know, that kind of takes you back. I see a lot of people just going, wow, remember that? Yeah. And, you know, but not that it's all just a night about, you know, the past. It really is the thing about remembering, and this is what I've learned more and more in the last few years, as, you know, even my journey has taken my family and me through some very, very dark valleys as well, with our daughter and losing our daughter and that, all of that, is that, you know, we have to keep remembering into the future too, remembering forward, you know, the promises of God and what I've always written about in my music. You know, this is what God has said and promised, and we got to hold on to that even when, you know, when we're in a hard chapter of our story. And so it's all of that kind of wrapped up into a night.
Well, those of us who are the cassette tape era, you know, when you started really getting out, and it took a while to realize, hey, man, this guy's getting out more, and he's out on tour and things, you know, coming back. It was kind of an emotional thing. I mean, it was like, yeah, you go, man. That's really good. We really felt good for you.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So that's awesome, because we always wonder, you know, what are they doing? Where is he now? You know, and now we don't have to wonder, so it's good.
Yeah.
So how are the Suns doing? I got to ask you. I'm sorry.
I said he's like a bad penny. He just keeps coming back, you know, showing up.
Really?
I don't really know what that means.
My
grandpa used to say it all the time. I was like, okay, like a bad penny. What's a bad penny? I don't know.
But we don't
anyway,
know.
Sorry, back to you, Joe.
No, that's okay. But your sons, I was kind of wondering about them because they were getting going musically a couple of years ago. What's going on?
Yeah, they're doing great. They toured with me, of course, for about 4 or 5 years, which was awesome.
It was.
Probably the best times on the road ever for me was having my sons with me on tour and getting to work together. And then they started, you know, writing and playing their own music and making their own records. And now their band Colony House, which is Caleb on guitar and writing the songs and singing, and Will Franklin, my son, is the drummer. And both of them just had new babies within the last 3 months. And so they're papas now, and but they're on tour right now. They're actually out with another band from Nashville called Judah and the Lion, and my boy's band Colony House. So they're on the road right now, actually on tour, and just out in the van with the trailer, you know, back in the days that I used to do, and you know, just kind of out there paying their dues and singing their songs and making lots of friends and fans everywhere they go.
Did you know Dr. Billy Graham by any chance?
You know, I did. I didn't, you know him, like hang out with him often, but I had probably 4 or 5 opportunities to share the platform with him as part of his crusades, his meetings and services. And one of the highlights of my life, one of the most, when I look back and think, you know, how in the world only God could have, you know, dreamed that up or made that happen, because I never would have imagined as a little boy watching the Billy Graham crusades on television, or, you know, watching his movies that he made or any of that, that someday I would get to meet him and minister alongside him. But I did. I got a chance to do that several times and visit with him a few times, and it was amazing part of my story and journey to get to call Billy Graham a friend. And, you know, when he went home, I thought, you know, this is one of those, again, just so, you know, thankful for his life, kind of the two-edged sword, you know, very just grateful that he's home and sad, obviously, that he's gone. But what a man who modeled kindness, he modeled passion for God's word, and he modeled gentleness. I saw him in so many, you know, situations where he was always so gentle and you know, kind, even, you know, just in the mainstream world that often would want to, you know, take shots at, you know, a preacher. He just had such a way of, you know, of winning people, you know, to hear what he had to say. And I was always so impressed with that.
I kept thinking there since he lost his wife, and I thought, maybe he must be thinking, man, I just can't wait to go home, you know, now. I'm ready.
Yeah, oh, I know. I know. Can you imagine the cloud of witnesses waiting to welcome him home?
Dude. Not even.
You know, there's so many that, you know, that are in heaven, you know, in many ways because of his faithfulness and his story and his life. And, you know, just what a cool thought to just imagine what that welcome home was like.
I know I got like 30 seconds left, but I know you're kind of the face of adoption now. Praise God for that. I mean, you know, we think of adoption and your efforts for that. And you got the hospital. I forgot what it's called. I just thought of that off the top of my head.
Yep. Maria's Big House of Hope.
Yeah.
China.
How did that whole thing come about?
Oh, man. Well, again, that's, you have to come to a concert to hear the whole story.
Okay.
Because I'll share it.
That's fair.
I'll share it, but
that's fair enough.
And I write about it in my book in great detail. But, you know, it really began with our daughter, our oldest daughter, Emily, on a trip to Haiti. She went with her mom and met children that didn't have a family. And God used that. I'm telling you, it's crazy, just in the heart of a little 12-year-old girl who came home and started to pray and write letters to us and, you know, notes and leave them on our pillow at night and say, Mom and Dad, I really think you need to pray about this. I think God, you know, is you know, telling me we're supposed to pray about adoption. And, of course, they're like, you're 12 years old. What do you know? You know, but it turns out she knew a lot, and God was speaking a lot through her passion. And we, you know, adopted our first of our three daughters, adopted Shoei 18 years ago, and she's 18 years old. She's a senior in high school. And then from that, we began to see, you know, these opportunities really and a need for families that wanted to adopt that couldn't afford it. And that's how Show Hope actually started with us. And still, it's the main thrust of what we do is to help families, you know, that want to adopt, just to help them financially. And we give, you know, financial assistance grants to Christian families that are trying to adopt. And we've been able to give over 6,000 grants to families, and just been incredible. When we started, you know, we just had this idea, what if we could help 10 families, you know? And we've been through this work of Show Hope, you know, been able to give millions of dollars to families with the help and support of others. And then in the process of that, I mean, that's for families adopting children from all over the world and from U.S. and everywhere. I mean, there's 63 countries that children have been adopted into families through the help of Show Hope, you know, so all over the world. But specifically in China, as you mentioned, our medical facility there, one of five that we have in China now, wow, that we fund and operate, that care for children that have, you know, that medically fragile children that aren't going to be able to be adopted and aren't even going to survive without intervention medically and that kind of care. And so we've been able to provide that for really thousands of children now. And we know of 600 or so that have been adopted that weren't even going to survive otherwise that now are in families. And so just an amazing part of our story that we've had a front row seat on, and we get to share about it. And I'll talk about it in the concert as well a little bit.
You'll have some people there.
What we're doing.
You'll have some people there probably that adopt. I know I have a good friend that they specifically went to China to adopt their daughter because of you. So that's me. And plus, I just wanted my one and only daughter's middle name is Elizabeth Stevens. So, I mean, we're practically related right there. So, you know,
there you go. We practically are. That's right. That's my Emily's middle name. So there you go. That's awesome.
Well, I really appreciate you putting up with this idiot right here, man. Thank you. And you put up with a lot of them over the years, didn't you, man? You kept on going.
Hey, you're putting up with me. We got it. It's mutual, you know. Thank you, bud.
Well, we'll see you when you come in April. Whoa, it'll be great here in April. Maybe it'll stop snowing by then. No, it'll be fine. But perfect. God bless you. God bless your family, Stephen. We're going to be praying for you, man. Thank you.
All right, brother. Thank you so much.
All right.
See you soon.